woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
What the bleep are you talking about, Manny? What the hell, man? The S&P futures up 19, Dow futures up 243, NASDAQ futures up 54. We're trying to bounce back off the sell-off of last week. We'll see if we can do that. We always seem to be able to. We'll see if this time we'll do it again. On the strength of the... Kevin, what they used to call them in our economics classes, regressive goods...
Regressive good, eh?
Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask what the bleep you're talking about, not just what the bleep Maddie's talking
about. Yeah, what was the, when we were in college, learning basic economics, which I sure wish some of our senators and representatives and people in charge like Paul and those people would learn, but they don't seem to want to. There's a shot. Shot fired early. If you go into a recession, the goods where the demand for the goods actually go up, like potatoes and things like that, they're called regressive. I think they're regressive goods. So when we saw the other day that Britain and Europe is going to start,
that makes them sound like they're overwhelmingly bad goods. That they're, they're coming for us.
Well, I mean,
a better name for that.
Well, when times are good, you might begin to go for your midlife crisis Jaguar convertible. When times are bad, you might begin to go for the 1998 pickup that still runs. You know, just saying. That's that was the other. Was the other one progressive? I mean, obviously, the demand for steaks would go down, and the demand for potatoes would go up. I seem to recall something along those lines. Does that make any sense to you? Or
well, it could be steaks versus chicken. But have you seen the price of chicken lately?
Well, you know what's wild. Just as an aside, because of people like Webby and those guys that go out to these bars and have all these chicken wings. Did you ever see the difference in price between wings and like anything else? One of these places that sells a lot, like the Peoria Market.
Well, of course, it's because wings are like a delicacy.
Yeah. Remember what happened when we went out with it?
the discerning palate prefers the wing.
Yeah, well, you know, Maddie, if I told you this, when our friend Bob Golden passed, and we obviously still miss Bob on the show and personally and everything else, we went to dinner at that place by Daryl's, and it was a Sunday night. And get a load of this.
I don't think I was there for that.
Maybe not. We go to this place. You know the place by D where they have the live band once in a while. It's a really nice. But the place, it's like a log cabin kind of place. You know what I'm talking about. We've been there like 2-3 times for various and sundry.
I take your word for it, but you got to remember, I don't live in Chicago, so I don't run.
But
out
you grew up a mile
very
from
often.
The,
I do. I have been known to do that.
You grew up a mile from the place. Are you going fuzzy on me?
Oh yeah, definitely.
All right,
that started long ago.
Anyway, we go in, and the chicken special on Monday night, on Sunday night, is 3 pieces of chicken, and it's like with corn and mashed potatoes, it's delicious. It was like $7 or some ridiculous number like that. Guess the piece they left out.
The wing.
Wings, because they had better things to do with
that's right. Wings. They had better things to do with the wing. So, anyway, I get this thing from the Peoria Market. This place
they needed that buffalo sauce, damn it.
Well, if ever you want to see, examples, the funny thing is, as you age, so we say, you start to look at things and you see things differently, right? And if ever you want to see evidence of the food deserts, in some of the black neighborhoods, All you have to do is go to Peoria Market on a Saturday morning about 7 o'clock. There's a line around the block for people to go in there and buy stuff. Because this COVID is, well, maybe it's better now. Some of these places are back open. But anyway, you go in there. It's an interesting spot because you put on plastic gloves. And everything's just out on the tables, and you grab them and put them in the bag yourself. So not a whole lot of people would be sort of interested in that. But anyway, the flyer, I think for the for something like 20 pounds of wings, guess how much?
20 pounds of wings, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, let's go for $40. What the hell?
It's like 49. And but 40 wow. pound 40 pounds of chicken of leg and thigh quarters, guess how much?
What'd you say the wings were?
The wings were like 49.
Okay, so let's go for 39 for the other part.
15.
15. Okay.
Yeah. That's the minute, and I got to believe there's a lot more chow at the leg.
You make me separate those dainty little wings, man. I'm gonna charge you for it too.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible how much
it's all labor cost in there.
Well, but it's all about what the demand is, what people want. I mean, I have no idea why some bar doesn't have fancy legs or something. I mean, they get them so much cheaper. It's scary. But
that would be an interesting. Well, I know bars with fancy legs, but they're generally called strip joints.
Yes, yes. And also, when you go in now, a lot of the places have...
That would be a good name for a place.
I'm sure it's been used
you
before.
You call it fancy legs, you serve chicken legs, and your waitresses wear really short skirts.
Yes, and it's like, you know, and they're shapely, you know. Anyway, just saying. But yeah, when you go into places now, you wonder why... a lot of places, I haven't been out that much, but there's no place to go, but you're always going to find like pulled pork sliders or something on the appetizer menu. Well, why is that? Well, you get pork anywhere for $1.50 a pound, and then burgers, what, $3.50? So all of a sudden, everybody has pulled pork sliders.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, I kind of notice this stuff because I like to see if the stuff we learned in school actually makes sense, actually works, and I think most of the time it does. By the way, did you happen to catch the $700,000 fine for two people not wearing masks that have already had the disease? Gruden and what's the guy's name on New Orleans, Manny?
Sean Payton.
Sean Payton?
Sean Payton, yeah.
Kyle Shanahan was part of that as well, the young coach of the 49ers. He either refused to wear a mask or at least pulled it down for a portion of the game, and so he got fined as well. And so the team gets hit with a huge fine,
yeah,
and then the coach gets hit with a fine that's not small either. So it's really
it's like $100,000 and $250,000.
Yeah, $100,000 to the coach, and then $250,000 to the team. That's not a slap on the wrist, in my opinion. $100,000, I don't care how much money you got. $100,000 is a lot of money.
So let's see, you got 150 people, 130 people on the field, and 100 of them are not wearing a mask, and the other 30 are liable to $250,000 fines. Is Kevin, is this bizarre world, or what are we talking about? They all get tests like every other day, or every day. Just saying. Plus, I got to ask a stupid question, which isn't very stupid, by the way. If we think 20 to 40 to 50 million people in the country have already had this disease, and at least for a while are not susceptible to it again or danger to anybody else, are they ever going to pick up a right anywhere here or no?
I doubt it. Truly do. It's all so stupid. I don't even know where to begin with that. You know that there's. I certainly don't have any original thoughts that anymore on this. We're just friggin' nuts.
Well, but the numbers, and I don't get the connection. I mean, the market's up today, and that's good. Obviously, we're long for my people. I would like it to go up. We're actually trouncing gold and silver because, and we've gone long that, so that's not good. We're trouncing gold and silver because the dollar is shooting up. The reason why the dollar is shooting up is nothing positive whatsoever. It's a relative thing with the Europe because they're absolutely going to try and torpedo their economy now. They shut down again. How do they plan on coming back, Kevin? And I don't, the whole idea of, it is so stupid. Close the bar an hour earlier. What are we talking about? Even in this city, all you do is how the economic numbers are spectacular. This will be the shortest recession we've ever had. Kevin, it's getting worse, not better. I don't know what these people are talking about. Maybe I'm Chicago centric, but it's one thing if Kevin and Chief's gin joint goes out of business and our gross is half a million a year. It's quite another when Lowry's and those kind of places go under. Because what do you figure? We figure Lowry's gross is 10, 8. They're just going to close up. Who's going to pay the rent? I mean, what do we? We have another eyesore on Ontario and is it Ontario and State or Ontario and Michigan, which is a serious corner that you don't want to. You know.
There was a time when you would never have imagined that.
No,
you never would have imagined vacancies there.
No, and now I mean, if you go down that River North area, Maddie, where Kerry Carey's is, all those streets there used to be one. And I remember when O'Callaghan's opened, it had to be like the only bar there, other than the place. What's the dive bar around the corner? It begins with an M, not Macy's. Anyway, they bought that too. That's where all the people from the press, the Tribune, and all those guys would go drink afterward. Rossi's. They used to make more money at Rossi's. Callahan's is a gorgeous place with all these mob, good-looking people in there at night. They made way more money at Rossi's than they ever did at O'Callaghan's, because Rossi's guys were there at 7 in the morning just drinking, and because they just got off their shift. But I'm saying that whole – now you can't go down the street there. There's got to be – how many restaurants per block, maybe? 7? I mean, are they all still closed? I mean they can't all have an outdoor. I don't know.
You don't have to have an outdoor to be open. You haven't for quite a while now.
Well, some places...
For like 3 months.
But some places have refused to open inside because the 25% wasn't worth...
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's a choice. And the choice is made tough on them, obviously, by the limited capacity number, 25% or 50% or whatever it is. But to be clear to the audience, it's not like you can't be open right now.
Okay, but with the...
Unless you don't serve food, then you're screwed. If you're a bar that doesn't serve food, you cannot be open, and those places are closing.
But the cleaning protocols are such, that's why the Lago won't you inside. It's over 25% of the people here. For 15 people, how do I have to clean the place every half hour? Or whatever, when the cleaning protocols are dramatic. That's why our buddy Dr. Blade, Mark Johnson, won't open a psychiatrist place. He's doing it all online. Because the cleaning protocols in Vermont... Because it's a psychiatrist's place. The guy comes in and lays down on the couch. They want the place totally cleaned every 20 minutes or something.
He probably doesn't lay down on the couch very often either.
No, he doesn't. Maybe he should.
I think that's a stereotype thing. Where
yeah, I'm thinking it probably is too. But
you probably just sit in a chair.
All right. So what is the? I want the whole couch. If I go staring up at the ceiling.
Bob, a couple Norton. Of pillows. Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, that would work. Maybe a massager couch, make all the bad stuff come out even better. Yeah, not a bad thing. All right, so what's the story with the college football? The Irish are canceling this weekend. They have an open date with these guys.
Yeah, so they'll probably have to cancel the following week, too, because all these people are going to be quarantined for 14 days. The information we don't have on the testing is, are there symptoms or not? You know, what do we know about that? Are there symptoms? Does anybody have to go to the hospital or the infirmary, or did they just test positive? You know, we're talking about this in class yesterday, and one of the students was saying, yeah, he tested positive, he had to quarantine, and I said, did you have any symptoms? Nope, none whatsoever, and. At this point, are we reasonably certain that you're not going to spread it if you don't have symptoms? Well, how do you spread it? Generally, you spread it by sneezing, coughing, things like that. Assuming your normal day-to-day contact with people. So, the next question is, what do we know about PCR tests? Well, we've set them to so sensitive that. That all kinds of people are going to test positive where, they barely are. And so, I don't know how much of that comes into play with Notre Dame or any other football teams. So, okay. I get being overcautious. I do in that situation. Because the health of these people is important in general, but it's also important to your ability to actually have a football team. And certainly in the cases of the pros, I would be super cautious about that. But I don't, once we hear the story of them having positive tests, you got a fair number of people who just kind of fly off the handle and say, oh my God, this is awful, this is terrible. Yeah, they probably don't have any symptoms.
Yeah, what do we do if we had a positive test of a bad flu season? Just, I mean, I know it's a little worse than that, but still.
Well, we've seen that. You know, I've seen that with college basketball, and I think just about anybody who follows it has, that there have been occasions when, you know, when someone on the team gets the flu and it spreads through the team because, you know, it's such a small, tightly knit group, especially in basketball, that, you know, I've seen games where, you know, I think the only times I have seen it have been like the, you know, the December games against Patsies or the November games against Patsies. But nevertheless, I've seen like the Irish come out and have, you know, three guys out. Two starters and a key reserve out for this
game. Well,
you
see it with the, you've seen it with the Bulls. You see it with the pro teams all the time.
They have the flu.
You see it with the pro teams all the time.
Yeah.
I never really got, and maybe Maddie did, the explanation on the day the Bears had seven people test positive, and by the end of the day, none of them had. What the hell happened there?
Well, the testing's not reliable, so...
But how do you figure that out in 5 hours?
You test again.
How many times a day are these people getting tested? I read something that...
Well, I don't know if they test daily or if they test, you know, if they test every couple of days. I don't know. I don't know what their protocols are for it. But once you test, it's who was it? Was it DeWine, the governor in Ohio? So he skipped a Trump rally because he tested positive, and then he went back home and tested negative.
I read somewhere in one of these football things, I don't know, it wasn't a football thing. I was watching, I was on the bike at the club, and I'm watching one of those sports talk shows, and somebody flipped up a number. I couldn't believe it. In the last 5 or 6 days in the NFL, when they were all in their bubble camps, they administered something like 600,000 tests. Some incredible number of how many people in the organization, anybody in the building. I mean, even the owners can't go, you know, past their booth, and they had five positives. I mean,
there's the good and the bad of the bubble. So maybe you have everybody in a bubble, and you keep the outside world out and from contaminating them. But on the other hand, if you have everybody in the bubble, once it's in, it's going to spread through it.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of our contributors to the show is our buddy Greg. His son, he goes to DePaul High School. So all of a sudden, some kid that he came in contact with, which one of the tracing things, tests positive. So they sent him home for 14 days. They don't give him a test. They sent him home 14 days, say, go have the kid tested. No, by the way, maybe you should stay home for like 14 days. The kid has no symptoms. It takes him a couple of days to even find a test, or a day one where you get the results pretty quick. So he goes up to Northwestern, and the doctor says to him, you know, kid's fine. He doesn't have it. What do they send him home for 14 days for? What is that going to do when he doesn't have it? And the doctor says, when are we going to wake up and say, nope, very few people now are going into the hospital. We've figured out how to treat this thing in just about every case. The hospitals are not overwhelmed. And why don't we just say every man for himself and and just everybody go back to work? He goes, how is it that everybody's not going to get it? Every time they close something down, you can't close enough places down to where do we actually think we could stop the cold? And if we did that, why doesn't everybody take 6 months to go live on a mountaintop and come back and there'll never be another cold and flu, right? Is that the logic here?
That seems logical, doesn't it?
Yeah, except I'm not so sure I know how to feed myself on the top of a mountaintop. I'm not so good of a fisherman. If I brought Maddie Weber with me, I don't think we'd ever catch a fish, would we, Maddie? Or are you going to tell me you're a good fisherman?
I don't think there's any talent in fishing, but...
You're going to get some serious tweets on that.
I fished a lot when I was a kid, and it was basically if you went to a spot where there was fish, they would bite, and if you didn't, they wouldn't. I mean, I didn't do anything differently.
Well, now, tell that to some guy who goes to, you know, some... blue ribbon trout stream and gets just the right trout.
Well, yeah, if you're standing in the water, I guess, and fly fishing, there's definitely an art to that. But if you're just dropping it in a pond or a lake or a river, I mean, if you know where the fish are.
That's different. That but if different. You know, the people who get into competitive fishing, they, you know, there's a whole skill set that goes with that.
No doubt. No doubt about that.
Was the skill set going out and paying like a gazillion dollars on a boat with all the fish finders and all the electronic stuff where you can drop
That's what they all have now, yeah. They have those fish finders that literally tell you where all the fish are, and then you just drop in.
Yeah, but you still have to reel in those, you know, those big ones that will fight back.
That's true.
And that's where it comes into that's where it comes into play.
Yeah, my grandfather and my uncles are big fishermen, so when I was a kid, I would go out a lot. I haven't fished in like 20 years, but yeah, I used to do it a lot, and I always found it kind of fun, but it would be much more fun if I was old enough to drink when I did it.
So I assume you're not like a big shareholder in
Cabela's. Yeah, I always find it kind of boring, so I don't do it.
It is kind of boring unless you're with people that you can kind of socialize with and have a few drinks, and then it's probably pretty fun.
I like it when they go
fishing.
Yeah,
I can sit there on the porch and do that.
Well, our friend Larry here in the office used to be a big-time fisherman. He and his brother had a boat. I like it when he came back with the stuff all filleted, all frozen, and all I do is bread it and cook it. That was my idea of fishing.
Fishing through the caught fish, yeah. Which one you're going to take home.
You know, the caught and clean fish. And then rubbing it through the breadcrumbs and into the frying pan. That was
my brother, he cleans all the fish, too. So, and he tries to get me to do that, and I got no interest in learning how to do that. Ripping the head off and then pulling the skin off or the scales, depending on the type of fish.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, deboning it and all that.
Well, he's a master chef. He's got to do all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, he actually is sushi certified. Which you have to get certified for. He actually knows how to cut even, like, sushi cuts.
He doesn't look like a sushi chef.
He does not look like one. That's true.
I like the two guys over. You ever go to D's? And Armitage, they've been there forever. And they close the dining room, but they still have the carryouts.
Yeah.
The two guys that do the... They're from Japan, obviously. The two dudes they look like Kung Fu's guys. And they stand there absolutely motionless until they get an order. Then they fly into action and they're chopping away. And as soon as the order's done, they drop back into they look like the Sphinx. It's unbelievable. Hey, do you hear what we're gonna do, Kevin? Are recruiting for a whole bunch of people to go over and knock down the pyramids because they hear they use slave labor.
All right. Cancel the pyramids.
Yeah, we're canceling the pyramids. They're also, Maddie, right before you came down this morning, they're going to rename Dixie Beer after 131 years.
Well, I saw the Dixie Chicks change their name to just the Chicks. So everyone's disassociating with the word Dixie.
Ah. I actually read a very interesting...
When are they changing Dixie Highway in the south suburbs?
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know why it was ever named Dixie Highway.
Yeah, I know, but we talk about far from Dixie.
Well, it headed south, which is not very far.
Yeah, I didn't think it headed all the way down to, like, Mississippi.
No, I didn't either. So, Kevin, I got a thing from the, what I still look at that Quora Digest once in a while. And it was an interesting thing about why did the average soldier fight in the Civil War, the Southern soldier. And it was pretty interesting. It had to do, because the guy was, we'll talk about this maybe a little more after the break, but... SP futures are only up to 1275 now. They're up 16 when we came in, but they're still up. NASDAQ futures up 14. Individual stocks, we have Boeing up $1.30. We got American Express down 165. The big news last night was Nike up $14, as their sales were only down 1% from last year. Everybody thought it was a lot more than that. So that stock is up 12% this morning. That's probably the big mover in the Dow. Matter of fact, it is the big mover in the Dow. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. The other stock I forgot to mention, the Dow that's up a bunch, is Johnson & Johnson is up 359 as they are putting 60,000 people into a late-stage trial testing of its coronavirus vaccine. Vaccine which should not, word should not be used. It's not a vaccine. It's a flu shot, but that's just us. And they got this huge picture, this big hypo here on the CNBC. Anyway, they have 60,000 adult volunteers, and we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it goes pretty well, obviously. S&P futures up 13.50, NASDAQ futures up 19, Dow futures up 193. And most of that is Nike and Johnson & Johnson. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 201. That's 1.6%. Remember, they were down 3%, I think, on Monday, and they made just about all of that back. FTSE down up 129, 2.2%. CAC around up 85, 1.8. As to why they're going up when your economy's down, I have no idea. This is a bizarre world. Nikkei down 13, call that flat. Shanghai up 5, call that flat. Hang Seng up 25, call that flat. So not much going on over there. Just as a review, yesterday the Dow was up 140, S&P up 34, NASDAQ up 184. So we're bouncing back pretty heavy from last week's sell-off. Bonds, 0.67. They're still not giving you any hint that we're coming out of any recession. Bund, minus 0.50, again, unchanged. Japan, negative 0.001, so negative but just barely. Oil up a penny, 39.81. Brent up 10 cents, 41.82. Natural gas up 3 cents, 186. RBOB up a penny to 117. And gold has been getting hammered with the dollar going flying up there, down another 14 bucks under 1900. 1893. Silver down 84 cents, 2367. That's 3.5%. Copper down 2 cents, 303, barely hanging above 3 bucks. Maddie, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The northbound tri-state has been a mess all morning. We had an earlier crash involving two semis. That crash has now been moved to the right shoulder, which is good news, but still some significant congestion on the tri-state northbound side just before the I-290 Eisenhower. So keep that in mind if that's part of your early morning commute. You gotta expect slow travel times heading on the northbound I-294 out west. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower itself is looking fine. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. And everything else off the expressways is looking good as well. So no major issues or delays to report. Weather today, another beautiful day as we begin fall here. I think yesterday was the first day of fall, wasn't it?
Yep.
And we have terrific weather the last week or so. And today, no different. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 80. Right now, it is clear and 61 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 104 today. Right now, it's clear and 77. In sports, not a good night for our Chicago baseball teams. In fact, both were walked off via the home run in the bottom of the ninth inning. I don't know if that's ever happened. I don't remember a time when the Cubs and White Sox both got walked off in the bottom of the ninth with a home run on the same night. But it happened last night. Sox had a 3-2 lead with two outs and two strikes on Jose Ramirez, and then he went yard, pulling a three-run shot into the right field bleachers in Cleveland to beat the Sox 5-3. White Sox magic number to win the division remains at 4, and they're now just a half game up on the Minnesota Twins, who won last night. So that is coming down to the wire in the AL Central, as the White Sox just have, 5 games remaining with a half game lead, 1 game up on the loss column, the Minnesota Twins. Indians are playing good ball. They've won 3 in a row, and they're just 3 back. So they're not out of the division race either. Cubs have a little bit more of a cushion, but not much. They came back and tied it late last night on an Anthony Rizzo 2-run homer in the 8th inning to make it 2-2, only to give it up in the 9th, a walk-off home run down the 3rd base line, and they lost to the Pirates 3-2, so the Cubs' magic number remains at 4. They did clinch a postseason berth last night as the Phillies were swept in a doubleheader, so the Cubs clinched a postseason berth, but no celebration, getting walked off by the Pirates, and they, of course, want to win the division with their magic number at 4. Cardinals won, unfortunately, so the Cubs' lead is 3.5 on the St. Louis Cardinals, but only 2 games in the loss column. The Reds are 4.5 back, and the Brewers are 4.5 back in the NL Central. Lastly, the Diamondbacks beat the Rangers 7-0. And then big news in the NBA, the Chicago Bulls made a splash. They hired what most people consider the best free agent coach out there. They hired Billy Donovan, who left after 5 years at Oklahoma City with a 243-157 NBA record. Spectacular record with the Thunder. But he also won 2 NCAA titles with Florida. He signs with the Bulls. We'll learn more about the contract details later on today. But Billy Donovan, your new Bulls head coach. Chief.
It was the smallest splash ever, Manny. The Bulls hiring a coach. Is the NBA still playing? Are they even around anymore?
Yeah, the Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals was last night.
Oh, right.
The Nuggets beat the Lakers.
Then you and who
the
else
Nuggets,
watched?
Why do I care who watched?
You're saying,
I have some stake in the NBA?
No, I'm saying if Jill didn't watch with you, it's one.
No, I watched the Cubs, and then I watched the White Sox, and then was going back and forth, and then the basketball game started at 8. And the Nuggets team, who was built by the new Bulls executive, is spectacular. And they're all just young guys and really fun to watch. And so I like to watch them whenever I can. And I hate the Lakers, so I like rooting against the Lakers. And the Nuggets beat the Lakers' ass last night, which was great. So I watched a little bit of that, too.
That's a constant in sports, like hating the Yankees, hating the Lakers.
Yeah, and especially this Lakers team. They're just very, at least in my opinion, I'm sure some people like them, but they're very unlikable to me.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the Nuggets.
I'm with you on that. They're a hard team to like.
Yeah, and the Nuggets are just fun to watch.
A couple of things. Last week we talked about the possibility that the Cubs and Sox series would be meaningless. Now it's conceivable that both could clinch their divisions against each other next weekend.
Yeah, now it looks very meaningful.
Second is I've become very, very ready for the automated strike zone.
Why?
Yeah,
Angel Hernandez.
They have the technology. You know, if it's not the perfect strike zone, it'll be consistent.
Angel Hernandez is the worst umpire I've ever seen in my life, and he was even bad for him last night in the White Sox game.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean,
and I've seen so many of these. You know, call it 4 inches outside the strike zone that just changes an at bat and a key at bat in a game. And you know, when you have the technology to do it right and without disrupting the game, I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
Well, as one softball ump once told me when I was on the mound, Kevin, I was pitching him a little bit. He said, "Hey, I'm umping a lot better than you're pitching." And he was right about that. It was not one of my best games.
But when you have a ball in the strike zone and you call it a ball, then you're not umping as well as the guy's pitching.
Are we saying that out of the 22 strikeouts the Cubs have every night, that it should only be 21 if we had a good hump?
No, what I'm telling you is players that see a lot of pitches and they have discipline at the plate should not be penalized for that.
Once in a while,
I agree. It doesn't slow the game down. Tennis has been doing it forever on ins and outs, and they have the technology, and it speeds the game up because there's no arguments. It's just it's in or out. They look at it, boom, in. Keep going.
Well, what I sort of find is that the as you've gone further down the road with this framing the pitch of the catcher, that it's become more difficult, though. It looks to me.
It may be, but I don't think there are very many catchers that are good at it. You know, the art to framing is making it an easy, smooth motion, so that it really genuinely does look like the pitch is landed where you caught it, you know, where your glove ended up. And instead, you know, you see a lot of these guys who just, you know, kind of jerk the ball back into the strike zone, and I can't imagine that fools anybody.
Well, last night, Jim Dursais, and one of them, he goes, God, look at the catcher. Well, first of all, Len Caspers goes, looks like we got a break on that one. He said, well, the catcher made such a violent move to frame the thing. He goes, it was already a strike. He said he probably fooled the umpire.
Yeah, could be.
I'm not all that worried that much about the imperfect. I mean, it's a human game. It's an imperfect game. I mean, imperfect game. I'm not all that worried about it. They miss. What a good umpire says, he misses what, 5 calls a game. Does that really matter? To what?
Yeah, Angel Hernandez misses 5 calls every game.
He's a little. Well, some guys
he's
have
horrible.
Some guys. My buddy, Tom Payne. Is it? Not, what's his first name? Was it John? John Tom Payne. He's a smaller guy, and you'll see him consistently call a ball, the low ball, a strike. So his strike zone, you got to move it down 2 inches. But I think players deal with that. I don't think there's a real big problem with that. I mean, what I've noticed, Kevin, is
if they're consistent, yeah. The problem is that is the umpires who are not consistent.
I, as you know, I've been spent how many years on the mound, and I also remember when the American League umpires were the outside chest protector. Maddie, I'm sure you've never seen that, except maybe in some old retro game. But the story was in those days is that your umpire, and this is not a plus or minus for, you know, for the chip, but the umpire, you always saw, if you see him on TV, like in The Natural, you see the two heads, the catcher and the umpire's head right above them when they had the outside. Well, those guys in the American League, they always would say, they call the high strike, they call the outside and inside damn near perfectly, and we're in a little bit of a fog on the low strike. Because, hey, you can't see it. You're over the catcher's head. So that's where, if you're a pitcher, that's where you'd want to work. Now, they're so worried about getting hit that they duck down below where their face is like next to the catcher. So as a pitcher, even in softball, whichever side of the umpire or the catcher that the umpire would stand, I would always work the other corner because they can't see it. If you're going to get a pitch 2 inches outside or inside, it's only if the umpire is on the other side. Otherwise, he's right on it. So, I mean, there's a lot of this is I guess the machine will take the humanity out of it. But right now, I mean, so that's what you lost and that's what you gained when you went from the outside chest protector down. I don't know which is better. It's just different.
And what year, if you had to guess, did the outside chest protector go away?
In the American League, I'm going to say 68 or something.
Close. 1973.
Yeah. Thing had to be a lot cooler.
By the way, I while we're on baseball, before you guys switch topics, I did want to touch on something real quick. So they did announce, you know, we know that the structure is different this year. 16 teams, you know, seeds 1 through 8 in each league. And it's the 3 division winners, the 3 second place teams will be 4, 5, 6, and then 2 wild cards, 7, 8. So that, just to be clear on that for those that don't know. But they also announced, the bubble, situation in MLB playoffs, which start next week, September 20, looks like 29th. For the American League, and then 30th for the National League. So the wild card round will be best of 3 series, and all 3 games will be at the home ballpark of the better seed. So both the Cubs and White Sox will host, it looks like, pending impending doom here, will host their first round wild card game, all 3 games if necessary.
Well, if the Cubs score 3 more runs between now and the end of this regular season, you know, with their pitching staff, how many games can they win? 2?
0, probably. The division series, the next round, is a best of 5, And then that's when we go into a bubble. So the ALDS is in San Diego and Los Angeles. The NLDS is in Houston and Arlington, Texas. So, you know, the obviously the ALDS will be played in National League ballparks, San Diego and LA Dodgers. And then the NL will be in the American League ballparks, Houston Astros and Texas Rangers. And then the League Championship Series will be best of seven. So this will be the first round where it's best of seven. The ALCS will be in San Diego. The NLCS will be in Arlington, where the Texas Rangers play. And then the World Series will be a best of seven, all games in Arlington, where the Texas Rangers play. So there you go. And it's scheduled to run through October 28th, if necessary, the World Series.
Are you, you ever been to Arlington to a game?
I've been to Arlington. I've never
not
been to a
the
game.
New ballpark. I had been there for one of the old ones.
What do you mean? They're building
generations.
They're
ago.
Building yet another new ballpark. That's not open yet. I don't believe.
I don't know.
I went down there to watch a game, and that's when I toured the Dallas football stadium. And the reason why they picked there is, well, first of all, they cleared the whole area out of, like, it was kind of a, you know, sort of crummy housing, somewhat trailer trash kind of thing, trailer park kind of thing. And what's left there is this big amusement park, which obviously must be closed, right?
And the Rangers Stadium, by the way, opened in 94.
Right. But, I mean, they're building
a retractable roof stadium,
is it,
I believe.
Did they break ground on that?
I'll find out.
Anyway, but I'm guessing that with common sense, there's a really nice hotel, like, right there, a block away from Arlington, the block or two. I know it was easy walking distance because I bought my ticket in the parking lot. And there's nothing else around there. So if you're going to put people in a bubble, that would be the spot. If the amusement park not open, there's not going to be another soul within a half a mile from you. So, I mean, it really is a good place. So there, take that, Chicago, huh? But I imagine that's why they're doing it there. Will you agree or not?
So it looks like Globe Life Field, the new stadium, opened this year.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's why they're doing the bubble down there, isn't it?
Yeah. So the old stadium,
it's a new place, and as an enclosed stadium, they can guarantee the ability to conduct games.
Yeah. So
all right. Well,
this 2020 is the first year for Globe
Life. Where is that in relation to? There's the hotel. There's the Arlington Stadium, and another half. Not even half a mile down is the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. Where is that in relation to the other two?
I don't know. I'll find out.
I know it's right in that same area. Is the old one down?
No, the old one is now being used by the Dallas soccer team and a couple of other, like, minor league tenants.
Gorgeous park. Absolutely gorgeous park.
The games were so hot and so humid in the summer at the old, you know, the ballpark in Arlington that was there from 94 to 2019. That they just decided we have to have a retractable roof because fans weren't going because it was just unbearable.
Yeah, it's pretty warm. Well, you know what? I'm not going to get on the global warming situation, but did you read, Kevin? I thought I sent it out maybe a week ago, that what they're finding is that the the warming that's going on globally, and I'm sure some people are going to say it isn't really, but yeah, it is. The maximum temperatures are going up, but not all that fast. But what they're finding in places like Chicago and other places is that the minimum temperatures in the summertime are going up faster than the maximum temperatures. That's interesting. Because we don't have any more concrete than we did 100 years ago, I don't think. Maybe we do. But, I mean, something... New York was always spectacular, how the thing would actually get warmer at night. It seemed like it, because the whole place is concrete. But what do you suppose is causing that? I mean, I'm no scientist, but
I have no idea. So
yeah.
So you need to get an expert on for that.
Do we have any? Is it possible to be an expert and not be challenged by somebody who doesn't know anything anywhere now?
So what?
Do we have to?
Let's hear the opinion. I'm open to the voices. But I don't know anything about it. So I'm not going to comment on it.
You're not a. I don't want to sound like a total Luddite here, but I think somewhere along the way that for anybody to offer a serious opinion, there needs to be a certain amount of effort into it. That it would, if somebody actually got themselves all hunkered down to where they actually wrote a nice letter to the editor, it took you a couple hours to do it. The idea of somebody who you know, whatever, doesn't know anything about anything, or which would be me in a lot of subjects, by the way. You don't see me.
Or data, Tom. You know, you get the data and you start digging into it and you start organizing. You know, you got to do the work. It, same thing with COVID-19.
We're making it so easy to give your opinion.
I'm willing to comment on that because I've spent a lot of time working with the data.
Well, and we also have
Carl
with us.
That works for me. We're getting low on time, and I really want to talk about the Supreme Court for a minute because there are a couple of points I want to make. One is the hypocrisy issue is I think is just obvious, and that's fine. But what I don't understand is in much of the media coverage, it's all Republican hypocrisy. Nobody seems to know that the Democrats are taking the exact opposite point of view from where they were 4 years ago. Which I think it's really odd that, you know, that it doesn't cut that way. And, you know, I wish people would just embrace where they are. You go back and you say, you know, in 2016, President Obama didn't have the votes, so we didn't give him a seat. Now, President Trump has the votes, probably, so we're gonna bring the candidate forward. Okay. You know, that's not hypocritical. You may not like it. But at least it would be honest. So I wish that would happen. However, if your point of view is that the voters should decide who's going to pick the Supreme Court justice, then doesn't it seem incumbent on Joe Biden to do the same thing that Trump has done? Release at least a short list of who the candidates will be? Because if the voters are going to decide, they really ought to know who's, you know, what does that mean?
Kevin,
does that mean we just say, roll the dice, you know, whoever Joe says is going to be fine with me? Or does that mean that Biden has his short list as well, and we can look at that and evaluate it and make a rational decision about it? I Biden is just refusing to do it.
The two things I'll
push
back.
Why is he refusing to do it?
I didn't know that he was.
Pardon?
Why is he refusing to do it?
Because he doesn't want to be pinned down. Because if some voters aren't going to like his choice, he doesn't want to alienate them. Now,
you don't know why he's going to
like whoever his choice is. You know, I'm sure they will. But he's trying to work the middle, and the middle is in a different spot. You know, this is similar to packing the court. His comment about that this week. And I'll get to packing the court a little bit more in a minute. But his comment about whether he supports doing that, he says, I'm not going to say, because then it'll be an issue that Biden said this or Biden said that. Well, no kidding.
Well, it was an issue
last
time.
That's how it works.
It was an issue last time when he said, he was the guy who said something about we shouldn't put an appointment up there with somebody. The fact is the Democrats didn't do that. They said they were going to, but they didn't. Nobody's ever put, I don't believe, a guy who is somewhat moderate, by the way, up 9 months before, and had the Senate not even. It's one thing if the Senate went through the process and voted him down, but they didn't. They have the balls to do that. They said we're not even going to take it up.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying just embrace it. You know, say here's what we did. He didn't have the votes. We didn't like his candidate. We were willing to roll the dice and see.
But they didn't.
You know, I mean, it could have been somebody, you know, much different if Hillary had.
You're on that side. See, I'm in the middle now. You're on that side, so I can see clearly now. The idea is that if you were to bring him up and he were to, what was his name, the guy that Obama put up. If he'd have lost by the number of Republicans and the Democrats, I honestly, Kevin, don't have a problem with that. Okay, I have serious problems with it. But for the purposes of this, the problem with this is we keep jumping from chessboard to chessboard in all these debates. Not just you and me, not so much, but the rest of the country. They can never stay on the same subject. I mean, the idea that we can't find somebody that both sides say is a very good jurist and put them the hell on there. To me, that's the problem. And now, last weekend, all I did was read about they're going to force, no matter what happens in the election, Trump is going to force it to the Supreme Court, so he wants it basically loaded in his favor. The Supreme Court is not around to pick the president. They did that
no,
once.
No, the Supreme Court already has cases in front of it related to the election. So, you know, it's there. It doesn't even matter.
They're talking about...
They are going to decide the legality of some things. So, for instance, I think it was yesterday that a Wisconsin judge ruled that the mail-in ballots only need to be postmarked by Election Day, and they can be accepted, oh, I don't know, it was like 7 or 9 days later, which is just crazy considering the number of votes that we're going to have and the amount of time. Look, you want to do a mail-in ballot, do a mail-in ballot. You know, you've got 41 days left, so I think you have time. But the reason that that's a problem is that Wisconsin law is explicit that the ballots have to be in by the end of the day on Election Day. So you have a judge that made a different ruling. That's gonna expedite to the Supreme Court. That's gonna go in as a federal election law issue.
But that's standard.
So judges do make decisions that are going to affect the election.
But that decision, what the day should be, I don't know. That decision makes absolute sense to me because we've been doing that with the IRS forever, right? If you have it postmarked and then the post office takes 3 more days to get there, why should you get fined?
Because that's what the law says.
No, it's a law.
Change the law. You don't do that from the bench. You change the law. You take it to the legislature and let the legislature change the law.
This is
the whole issue of judge selections in general. Is some judges like to invent law like that, and others say if you remand it back to the legislature the legislature should change the law.
I don't want to.
That's the philosophical difference here.
No, I would say.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, well. The Republicans are all over that, and they've been on it forever. And to me, it's all BS. That is all BS. We have got a problem here, and the Supreme Court has now become the latest whipping boy. The problem is all over the place. We can't get ourselves together on anything. When I'm reading this article, I was horrified last week that if there's not a new judge on there, okay, that it's now basically a conservative court. If Roberts flips, then it's 4-4 on who gets to be president. I don't want the Supreme Court deciding who gets to be president.
I don't either. I just want them to interpret the law and say enforce the law.
Well, they figured out who was going to be president last time on party lines, Bush versus Gore, right? Which they shouldn't have done.
Well, no, they figured out what Florida law was and ruled accordingly.
Anybody in California
that happened to end the debate. But, you know, what's real interesting about it is that there were several independent recounts after the election, and not one of them ever took it to Gore. So it didn't matter anyway. So they did not decide it. Hey, I got two other things, and I got about a minute left, so I want to make sure I get these in. Second is this whole idea of packing the court, expanding and packing the court, is not retaliation for anything that might happen over the next several weeks. That has been Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg. That's been common throughout this campaign. They've been saying that all along because they don't like the makeup of the court. So what we're going to do is we're going to change the rules and change the makeup. Let's not claim that this is some kind of reaction to an awful thing that the Republicans are doing. It's exactly what they've been talking about all along.
There's an issue with this, and again, I see clearly now. I'm in the middle. The amount of the minority picking of the court. If you were to look at the, and I'm not saying, actually, I am saying we need a new constitutional convention at every level. I honestly believe that federal, state, and city. Especially city and surely state. But this idea.
Stop calling me Shirley.
Yeah, stop calling me Shirley. Yeah, this is a great day to. This is a horrible day to quit sniffing airplane glue. This is a horrible day to quit sniffing airplane glue. But the whole idea that if you were to add up the states, okay, the blue states versus the red states, At first, nobody wants anybody from California voting, right? I get that part. But they're bad people. You would add up to, I would say that it's probably 30% is now picking people for life. If you, we should not put a Supreme Court justice in there for life. Should be 10 years, 10 years renewable, something, something. This lady going in there, the only thing these people care about is that she's conservative. And she's what, 45? She might be there 50 years, for God's sake.
Well, there's two finalists, so which she are you talking
about? Notre Dame, whatever. Notre Dame girl.
Barrett.
Yeah. I'm not so sure I want her for 50 years. Anyway, Kevin, we'll have more time to talk about this on Friday.
That's
fine.
You don't have to want anybody for 50 years because, right. You know, a lot of people thought Souter and a lot of people thought Roberts were, you know, it was going to be terrible putting up with them for 50 years, and they've turned out to be quite moderate. Not really the point that I'm making here. The point that I'm making is about packing the court, and that whole thing is not something new that came out this last week.
It's
not a reaction. It's something that they've been wanting to do because they don't like where we are now.
Kevin, it's another example.
And that's okay. Take that point of view. Go ahead.
Don't
tell me, don't tell me it's for some other reason.
It's all for the same reason. That people can't be civil, can't pick people that are really good and put them on the court. We haven't been able to do that for a while. But are we ever going to hit bottom here so we can turn this bus around? Obviously not.
Speaking of hitting bottom, the last thing is I am just in awe of the religious litmus test that's being imposed. I'm not religious. I don't belong to a religion. But I sure as hell don't want somebody saying you're disqualified because of the way you practice your religion.
So you'd go for somebody from Opus Dei?
Who's Opus Dei?
She's close.
No, she's not. Go on the People of Praise website and see what they do. They've actually done things like move into some of the poorest neighborhoods in the country and worked with the people in the area to fix neighborhood needs. They've run summer camps for hundreds of children. They repair homes in the neighborhoods. They set up healthy food.
Well, let's talk about it on Friday.
You talk about food deserts. They do food gardens, urban food gardens. And it's not Opus Dei. It's like 15 different faiths are involved in this. So it's not a Catholic thing.
So the
idea that this is, can you imagine somebody saying you're disqualified if you're Muslim? Because you might have to hear a terrorist case,
We'll talk about it on Friday. So you're telling me you'll vote for her, but not our buddy Steve Kenny. There you're telling me?
No, what I'm telling you is, I'll evaluate her based on the rulings that she's made, not based on her faith. I'm just in awe of the bigotry involved in that.
I would agree with that, too. Anyway, I agree with you once, sir. You got one out of me. That's pretty good. SP Fuge, we'll talk on Friday, bud. I guess we don't have to worry about texting each other during the game on Saturday.
We definitely do not.
It is. SP Fuge's up 10. Nancy Fuge's now down 17. We'll be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes. Where's our coffee? He's not here.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck?
Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something happening here.
You know, well, welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm somehow Mr. Matt Weber, and he's also Mr. Russell Rhodes, who's supposed to be here at Coffee, and I don't see him. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures down 10.
He's in a bubble.
He's in a bubble. Hey, so my buddies from Pullman, we're always a very clever group, by the way, those that are still around. Mm-hmm. They send me all these little things, and some of it always says, it's always a little satirical, because they say these guys were satirical is an understatement. So this is one for you, Russell, from Britain.
Uh-huh.
So I am still officially not allowed to open my pub. Actually, they can be open up till 10. But estate agents are allowed to sell houses with viewings, etc. I'm officially putting my pub on the market as of tomorrow. Viewings are between 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. No appointment necessary, but you must buy a beer while viewing.
Love it.
I mean, that's how ignorant this has become to me. And
that's pretty good.
It's, you know, it's funny. We just arguing with Kevin. Kevin and I love to argue, mm-hmm. but you know, it is impossible the way things are going, which we're heading, to me, down the drain here, so many ways, intellectually, morally, it is impossible to even start a conversation because you don't know where you're starting it. Because there's such a history to everything you're talking about that it's just, I mean, you can't talk about what the Fed policy is without seeing what they did the last year and a half. You don't even know where you're starting the conversation. It is so difficult to do, Russell. I don't know how, even if we put, you know, some of the people from this, our listeners, which are pretty darn smart, and some of the people, and say we want to, you know, how are we going to turn this bus around? By the way, we are working on our 10-point plan. To turn this bus around, I don't see how, there is so much stuff that has dropped between the cracks. The idea now that every Supreme Court justice is going to be along party lines because we think they're going to decide the next presidential election. Russell, that's the wrong place to be, buddy.
Yeah, it is wrong. First off, I don't think they're going to decide the next presidential election.
Did you see the stuff I sent you?
I don't think that's a legitimate excuse. I think Biden's going to trounce him.
I think not. I think it's going to be very close.
Okay. We'll agree to disagree, and that's what makes a market and all that other kind of fun stuff. Although I've been told that you're not allowed to say that you agree to disagree anymore, because if you say that, you're part of the problem and you're not trying to come up with a solution. I had somebody say that to me yesterday.
You and I can agree to disagree on whether the Cubs are ever going to string two hits together again. It doesn't make us bad people.
No. Hey, this weekend we get a World Series preview. But I don't want to deviate from the more important stuff.
You and I and Maddie suit up for the Cubs, they won't make it. They'll be lucky if it's qualified. Well, I guess they're going to be in there. They qualified last night for at least the wild card.
You know what I would have done? What would have been my signature thing if I had been an outfielder for the Cubs? You know how they launch a ball into the bleachers when they're done warming up or whatever between innings? I would have thrown it to a rooftop.
If you could get it up there.
Oh, I could get it up there. If I were playing for the Cubs, I'd be the bomb. I almost said something else now. But I thought that would have been a cool move.
What if you conk somebody? Some conservative. If you conk a conservative, they'll sue you.
They'll see me?
They'll sue you. If it's a conservative liberal, maybe you won't, you know.
I know. Well, I'd be making the big bucks. I wouldn't care.
Did you listen to your two god heroes yesterday, Munchkin and Paul?
I did not listen to my heroes yesterday.
Why do you make me do that and you don't do it?
Because I have to bury my nose in a bunch of work that I have to get done. Because I have 183 students at Loyola this semester that depend upon me.
But they depend upon you to be right. You have your finger on the pulse of the economy. And how do you do that?
I can't do two things at once. I have to talk them, you know, off the ledge when things aren't going well in class.
So what are you telling them about?
What's important to them.
So when the stuff you teach, which I'm assuming is traditional economic theory, and then somebody raises his hand, professor, why is it that you're teaching us this crap and these other guys are doing exactly the opposite and they're supposed to be the best economists in the world? What do you say?
They don't ask those questions. They're not really at it. Although I talk about what they're doing and what they're doing wrong right now, and I explain to them how the environment's different than it was in the past. So I do try to make them aware that the 4 years that they're in college and being introduced to a bunch of different business concepts is occurring in an unusual environment in the world, and that inflation will poke its nose back up. And you know, that maybe that's why we continue to, and I say we, I mean the academic world, maybe that's why we continue to raise our tuition, just to make sure that people that go to school understand that inflation is a real thing.
You're doing
I
that.
I think that's why we're doing that.
You know what he reminds me of, Manny? The judge in Caddyshack. I felt I owed it to him. Yeah, I sent kids younger than you to the electric chair. I felt I owed it to him.
Yeah. Beyond, and you know, and every time I buy a hat, I get a free bowl of soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a cardigan and a free bowl of soup.
Did you, what do you make of this? This is not bashing anybody, but it's, well, but it is bashing. How did we get in the middle of cutting deals, and who gets to make it? I'm talking about this TikTok deal. And there was an article here on CNBC yesterday, and by Alex Sherman, and he talks about President Trump initially said only a full sale of TikTok's U.S. operations would prevent a ban of the application, but he settled on a lesser deal that involved minority stakes to Oracle and Walmart. If Trump had said in July that he would have been willing to accept a more limited deal, Microsoft would have won the deal and the TikTok CEO would still be running the company. So it's exactly where Microsoft had a deal to own more of the company months ago than that these two people ended up with. That his being involved screwed the thing up so bad that he starts going through all the collateral damages. All the companies that should have been involved walked away because of what he said. It had to be a total deal. And the fact that the chairman quit because they said they would never let that worldwide operation run. And now, of course, it's running as a worldwide operation. Now, how all the players and how many people quit out of there because of his, trumpeting, his, beating him like a bazooie, he sounds. And all of a sudden it ended up with just a minority stake and they still get to run like they used to run. But what the hell? What the hell?
You got to wonder if something weird. I'm never really a big conspiracy theorist. But you got to wonder if something weird happened behind the scenes, that everything changed around to the point that it changed around on that one. Because I was all for, taking the control of TikTok or trying to control have better control of what happens with all the information that they gather when you post various TikTok videos and. The huge demographic information that falls behind ends up going over to China and ends up at some point possibly being used against us. Because I just really have reached the point where I think that I never think that there are good intentions with anything that China does. Period.
Well, did you know that
that they're neutral? That there's always bad intentions every time they do something.
Did you know that the bunch of teenagers evidently used TikTok to reserve a bunch of seats at Trump's political rally in Oklahoma City in June?
Not exactly. They communicated with each other to do it over social media, and I don't think it was just TikTok.
Probably not. I mean, I'm just telling what I'm reading here.
They could have just as easily done that, you know, using Facebook. Well, I don't think young kids use Facebook or Twitter or whatever. Now, it's very and this is, again, this is me being probably overly conspiracy focused, but it's very possible that, you know, somebody over in China with a couple of fake TikTok accounts came out and said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if we did this?
Oh, that could be, yeah.
Original enough to do that, but, and then whenever anybody promoted it or encouraged it, they made sure it was at the top of some queue or something like that. You want to know the one that here's the one that actually I get more concerned about than TikTok is the drone people, DJI. I think it's DJI, the kind of the most popular drones, and they're really nice. I got one for my kid. You have to put all kinds of. They encourage you to put all kinds of information about where you're located and a bunch of other things before you start flying the thing around using the camera. And that's a Chinese company. And that one worries me a lot more than TikTok.
I'm going to go get a drone. A really good one. Maddie and I are going to come out and like fly it around your place.
Go right ahead. We've got one. It goes, I mean, it easily goes up a few hundred feet.
Oh, no,
I got her a nice one.
Maddie, write that down.
Years ago.
Yours are 300 feet. Ours is going to be 500 feet.
Okay. We could have a drone war.
I can honestly say that that's something I have zero interest in.
What do you mean? Well,
flying a drone around?
Yeah.
We'll have videos of him putting the cardigan on at 6 a.m.
Yeah, that's about the last thing you want. Trust me. That's about the last thing in the world anybody wants to see.
When we're sitting on our deck on the third floor and we see a drone flying above us, let's just say the finger gets whipped out pretty often.
Well, you don't even have to do that.
Why don't you get a shotgun?
You know who it belongs to.
Well, you're right about that. I know at least one of them.
I know who it belongs to. So.
God. Hey, here's what in this article. It's interesting here. It started out, well, first of all, the guy takes a shot at Trump, so you know kind of where he's at.
Of course.
He said the result resembles something from Trump's famous book, Art of the Deal, Talk Big and Then End on a Compromise, which is probably pretty accurate on this.
Yeah.
It says it started, obviously, simply. It said we want to protect the security of Americans from anything that could happen to them by using TikTok. It has now morphed into a ludicrous game match between tossing ownership here, control there. The original aims are out the window. It's just become a whole political mismatch. And then they went through the unintended consequences. You know, whenever you read an article, you got to toss the political part out a little bit, but pretty interesting. It says, Microsoft had quietly been talking to TikTok earlier this summer about a minority investment, accompanied by a cloud deal. But Trump's push for a full sale of TikTok's operations pulled Microsoft into talks to buy the full company. Now, when the Chinese government hit back at the U.S. government just before the deal was set to be announced, saying it would need to approve terms, Microsoft said no way, and they backed out. So they had a deal for a part of the place. And Trump said no, it had to be the whole place. So they said, okay, we'll try and do the whole place. That fell apart, and now they don't have part of the small part of the place which they had originally. So Oracle somehow got in and ended up with Microsoft's deal.
Oracle's not that's not exactly what they do either. You know,
right.
I was kind of there's just something very screwy that we don't know all the, you know, we don't know all the story or whatever, because Oracle is not, Oracle, they wouldn't have even been on my top 10 list of potentially buying TikTok.
Well, would Walmart have been?
Yeah.
Really?
Before Oracle, yeah. Anybody that wants like a huge digital footprint to leverage some other things, like selling crap. Yeah, I totally. If somebody said Oracle versus Walmart, and pick one and write a 5-paragraph paper on which one does TikTok make more sense for, I would totally pick Walmart.
Well, the
just because they fallen behind on selling stuff digitally. This gets them in front of a ton of people. It gets them in front of a ton of people that probably are more likely to buy crap than, you know, people our age.
Well, the point here is that people moved in and out of the negotiations.
Yeah.
Google, Walmart, everything based on what came out of the White House. And it turns out the thing that came out of the White House changed so much that, see, my theme here, Russell, is I'm starting to in my own feeble brain, is starting to catch a little traction. Is a lot of the stuff we're talking about and we argue about that is, what side of the aisle we're on, and is really not even principle. It's incompetence. I mean, I think it is becoming that the government at all levels, there's people there that shouldn't be there. And they make these decisions, they protect their own spot, and they do stuff, and all of a sudden you find out years later that, I mean, look at the Center of Disease Control. I mean, what a cesspool. I mean, we watch these guys, they come up with something, and then they walk it back, then they come up with some new news, and they all of a sudden they get some heat from the press, and they walk that back. For God's sake, you're supposed to be a bunch of doctors. It just seems odd to me. And I with some of the stuff, when I want to get back to you and your teachings, do you think there is anything now that all he did was talk about Powell? Now, a man must know this. He talked about I read an article like this years and years ago. That right now, that the monetary, it should be more fiscal policy. Now, answer me this, Professor. Am I right in saying there is no chance, there is no possibility of what you and I would consider fiscal policy right now?
Oh, there's zero chance whatsoever.
So how do we have the two two biggest economists in the country yesterday talking about it?
He's got to say it. Why? Because in reality, that, you know, the monetary side has done everything that they can possibly do. And unfortunately, the fiscal side is, the people that decide are so divided, they're not going to agree on anything. But, you know, at the same time, it's making the right decisions fiscally are going to result in you having a very difficult time getting reelected. Unless you're, I'm not picking on her, it's just the one that popped in my mind. Unless you're in AOC's district where, as Nancy Pelosi said, a pencil could get elected as a Democrat. You know, the only people that have the political muscle or assurance that they're not going to lose their job over it are the ones that aren't going to compromise on things. So nothing, I think everybody realizes in reality, nothing's going to get done fiscally, you know, to help things out, to carry the weight that they're supposed to versus the monetary side. I think that's why the monetary guys just, which is Powell and everybody else, are just having to overreach and do things that we never would have considered that they would do in the past. But they realize they're not going to get help from the other guy, so, you know, from the other side. So they're just going to have to keep trying to prop things up the best they can.
Well, I'm a totally different. I'd like to come talk to your class and disagree with their professor.
Okay. You're always invited.
The reason why the fiscal policy is, the government goes out and borrows money and uses it for a different purpose than the people they borrowed it from. Correct?
Right.
Well,
right.
There's no way they can do that now. So there is no fiscal policy. When they go out and borrow, that's still the two-step. They'll go out and borrow, but that an hour later, the Fed is buying those bonds up. So right now, the entire $3 trillion they put forth, the Fed gave it to them. That's not fiscal policy. That's these guys couldn't fart right now without it being monetary policy. They don't have money to even do that.
They're not doing anything that they should, period, as far as managing things fiscally. There's not.
No.
And they're not gonna. Come up with a scenario where they get pushed into doing the things that they have to do. Where, you know, you saw what happened in, let's back up an awful lot to things are going really bad a little over 10 years ago, and Greece, they basically got no money, and they're being forced to work within their means, and the population completely freaks out on them. What do you think the reaction here would be if they say, we've got no money, you know, we know we're in a pandemic, well, we don't have money for anybody that can't work, and, you know, you look around and you can't work because of the current environment. And beyond that, we're never going to increase Social Security again. And those of you that are of a certain age, we need you to work 4 or 5 more years because we got to balance this thing out. The personal cost to all the people to implement the fiscal policies that we need now, I mean, people are reacting in a very negative way to things that don't really impact them, like the things I just brought up would impact them. So you can only imagine the people reaction to what really needs to be done fiscally to get everything in order.
Well, yeah, we're not even on, whenever, but if we decide we're going to send out another $1,200 checks, the Fed is just going to print that money. That, what I'm saying,
yeah. But if the federal government started to, if all of the government agencies, because it used to be that the states were okay and the federal government was the one that ran the deficits, and now everybody runs the deficits. But if government started to operate somewhat within their means, even if they said, okay, we're going to kind of start, we're going to issue a bunch of 100-year bonds or something like that, and the interest will be manageable enough, and inflation will inflate that a little bit away so that we can kind of start back at square one and, you know, operate more like a business than, you know, a charity that doesn't work, that has a lot of big benefactors that are just going to keep on giving. The result would be digging ourselves back into another hole within 10 or 15 years.
Well, but right now, most estimates have us by the year 2030. The deficit is going to be twice as big as our GDP.
Yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, we're on track for that.
Certainly, a real GDP, which puts us in.
Unfortunately, we probably need to start looking at how things work in places like Argentina when they end up in a very negative situation like that, and how they dig themselves out of it. But then, how they live their day-to-day lives after they dig themselves out of it. And it's not something people in the United States are going to be particularly thrilled about.
They deflate their currency, so they totally screw their population. But they screw 90% of the population. The 10% that know it's coming end up better.
You can see what happens right now when less than 50% of the U.S. population feels like they're being wronged by things.
Well, we've got people that are so anxious fighting with each other. I mean, the idea right now that with Amazon. Do they pay any taxes last year? How does Amazon have a tax? Are they the guys that have the tax? What do you call it when you not a deduction, but you end up having a tax
surplus? Carry a credit over?
Yeah, but they have tax credits lined up for God knows what. For what? This is not the time to have your corporations down to sell.
I'm looking it up right now.
There's two things going down. One is you're not going to get blood out of a turnip. You're not going to get anything more out of the median income guy, right?
Right.
I mean, you can't do that. I mean, he doesn't have any more to give. So if you're going to tax anybody, the only people you can I'd say I wouldn't raise any rates at all. I mean, I'm very conservative and Republican when it comes to taxing. But I'll tell you what, if you don't pay, you're going to jail. Screw you. Because every time you don't, I have to pay more, and I'm tired of it. I'm absolutely, on a personal level, I'm very tired of it. All these people that went overseas, got these wacko deals, and I know a couple of the guys that brought them over there, some of my buddies. And you know what? Uh-huh. When I talked to those guys over adult beverages, all I did was laugh their ass off. And how they managed to blow that stuff by anybody in this country with any common sense.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how do you, one guy said to him, how do you propose something like this without bursting out laughing? The guy says it's $750 an hour. You learn not to burst out laughing. He goes, I mean, it's insane the amount of money these guys saved by being overseas for how many of those years. And by the way, I think if you read the tax law, which I haven't done as well as I should have to make this comment, I think if you have something overseas now, you get away with more than you did before. Is that true?
If you don't repatriate your earnings, and if you leave them over there and have a subsidiary, it can help you tax wise.
See, I have no problem.
I mean, Apple does that in Ireland, and the only reason I know that is because I visited the place in Ireland that Apple set up, where they had people working, and this is a white collar facility. They had three shifts of 8 hours each, 24/7.
Okay.
Because they had moved so much of their operations over to Ireland. And Ireland, as part of their way to rebound from the 2008 stuff, was to bite the bullet, implement some austerity, but offer great tax deals to big businesses to move there. And it worked for him.
Well, you know the real reason why the guy with the saucer came here and the day of the earth stood still, don't you?
No.
To make it a tax haven? So if he put Gort here, he could charge $1 million a day for Gort here, and he wouldn't pay taxes at home. Just saying.
I like it.
S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 2. They were just down, but we're all over the place there, flipping back and forth across the flat line. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes on the phone. I can't imagine if Russell would do this to his wife. The man takes his wife to get tested for COVID. 2 days later, he gets a call from the lab. Doctor says, sorry to inform you that your wife's test results are mixed up with another patient's. We're not sure if she has COVID or Alzheimer's. So what am I supposed to do now?
Good Lord.
Take her for a long walk and leave her. If she finds her way back home, don't open the door. I can see Russell doing
it. Oh, my God. I would never do that.
No, you wouldn't. I know you wouldn't. But now she's diseased. Why let her back in? You know, kind of a thing. There's some logic to it. I don't think they'd like being left and walking their way back home, especially if it was like raining or something. You definitely wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures down up 6. They were just down 12, so they're all over the spot here. This is the markets we've been having. The big change was in the individual parts, the sections of the market, is we are now Wednesday, and Monday we were down huge. We turned in the afternoon almost all to, I'll use the term, COVID stocks, Russell. Everything, as soon as the rumor turned out to be true that Europe was going to be closing down again, everything like Netflix and Amazon and all those things weren't flying up, Zoom, way up. So if you were in those, you were fine. The rest of them still were kind of dragging their way back. Dow futures up 188 over in Europe. DAX up 166. It's 1.3%. They're making their way back from being down like 3% on Monday. FTSE up 122, 2%. CAC around up 68, 1.4. Not so sure what the FTSE's so excited about if those guys are closing down again. I don't think we have... Let's put it this way. My calculations of how much is closing down is hurting economically seems to be different than other people's. I really hope I'm wrong, Russell. Nikkei down 13, call that flat. Shanghai up 5, call that flat. Hang Seng up 25.1%, so not much over in Asia. We have, this is a review of yesterday, because we ended up pretty high. Dow up 140.5%. S&P, however, was up a full 1%, 34.51. NASDAQ up 184, 1.7%. Bonds, still not anything bullish here. 0.68 on the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.50, unchanged. Japan is now minus 0.001. Oil, unchanged. Brent up 9 cents. Ours, West Texas is 39.80, so still down from where it was a couple of weeks ago. Natural gas, 194. That's up a dime today, by the way. That's a lot. RBOB up 1 cent, 117. At gold, whack whack, down 20 bucks, 18.87. Silver down a dollar. It's a huge, it's a 4% move in silver as the dollar continues to go up compared to other currencies that are locking down, and we are not as of yet. Copper down 4 cents at 301. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have an issue on the outbound Bishop Ford. Looks like a crash at 159th Street, which is exit 73 on the outbound Ford, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown on I-94, so keep that in mind. No issues on the inbound side. Ryan looks good, as does I-57. Stevenson has been pretty quiet all morning. Eisenhower looking okay. Kennedy and Edens looking good. A slowdown as you approach the circle, but no accidents or stalls to report. That earlier crash on the Tri-State is all clear. Only other crash in the area is out in the southwestern suburbs near Joliet. There's a crash with injuries on Naperville Road and Weber Road, reported as a head-on collision in the north curve of Knapp, it says, which is right by Naperville Road and Weber Road. So crews are on the scene there, and that's probably not a good situation with lots of crews out there in the southwestern suburbs. Everything else looking okay, though. Weather today, partly cloudy skies, a high of 80. Right now it's clear and 62 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 104. Right now it's clear and 78. In sports, Cubs and White Sox both lost last night in walk-off home runs in the bottom of the ninth inning. Sox lost to the Indians 5-3. They had a 3-2 lead with two outs and two strikes in the bottom of the ninth. Cubs lost to the Pirates 3-2. That game was tied at two apiece in the bottom of the ninth when the Pirates walked them off. So both teams' magic numbers to win their respective divisions remain at 4, with about 5 games to play. Cubs have 5 games to play. White Sox also have 5 games to play. Magic numbers at 4 to win the division. Both teams have clinched a playoff spot because the Cubs clinched last night. White Sox clinched last week. White Sox lead in the AL Central is now just a half a game over the Twins. Cubs lead in the NL Central is 3.5 over St. Louis, 4.5 over Cincinnati. Diamondbacks shut out the Rangers 7-0, and the Bulls hired their new head coach, former Florida head coach and Oklahoma City head coach in the NBA, Billy Donovan. Chief.
So right now, if the Cubs end up as a wild card, they'd go play L.A.
If the Cubs end up as a wild card, they would play L.A. I don't think so. L.A.
Whoever's the eighth best team would drop down to there.
Yeah, so you have Atlanta. Yeah. Right now you would have the top three division winners are the Dodgers, Cubs, and Braves.
The Cubs could lose out after watching
games. No, they could. Let's say the Cubs lose out. Let's say they finish, you know, with a 4 seed or a 5 seed or it could be a 6 seed. They would play either the Marlins or the Padres in the first round if they finished second in the division.
I'm gonna show my age and say that if you were allowed in the stadium out there and they were playing the Padres, you have to wear a bag over your head. You couldn't say you were a Cub fan. Just saying.
For what reason?
Because they're terrible. Oh. I watched them last night. I mean,
they're 32-23. So they're not terrible. That would be incorrect. Now, they're not hitting well. There's no doubt about that. You can't argue with that. They've won 6 out of their last 10. But they are the fourth best team in the National League, record-wise. But they would be the 3 seed in the playoffs if they started today with 5 games to go.
Well, you saw what happened to the guy in the U.S. Open, didn't you? He managed to have a great round on Saturday where he only hit two fairways. How'd that work out for
him? Be nice.
Yeah, how'd that work out for him on Sunday?
Yeah, he got second place.
Be nice.
Why? You know that guy?
Yes, be nice.
Yeah, I like that guy.
I love Matt Wolf. I love Victor Hovland and Matt Wolf. They're both Oklahoma State Cowboys like I am, except they make a lot more money than I do now.
I thought you went to Memphis.
I got my PhD from Oklahoma State.
Are you officially a PhD?
I went to a lot of schools. I went to IIT for a master's degree. I went to Memphis, and I went to Oklahoma State. I'm a Tiger Red something. They changed IIT. Cowboy. I'm a Tiger Red Hawk Cowboy.
I like that.
The guy couldn't wait to get out of there. He should be a senior now.
Matt Wolf. I follow a handful of golfers, including Ricky Fowler, just because of who he's married to. But and he's a Oklahoma State guy as well. But Matt Wolf is there. That's like, I saw he was up by a couple of shots on Saturday, and I was like, he's very inconsistent. He'll have a great round and then a bad round. That's his biggest weakness. So I wasn't, honestly, I was not the least bit shocked when he did not have a very good Sunday. I didn't expect him, even though he had a 2-shot lead, to have a very good Sunday.
The thing that mattered that you just said was Ricky Fowler's wife. So I just I just looked her up. So she's a track star / fitness model.
She was a pole vaulter at Berkeley, but she actually was one of those pictures that kept popping up over and over again, and everybody was like, who in the world is that?
Yeah, she's something to look at.
She's just flawless would be a good word. And Ricky Fowler is not a very good-looking guy at all.
He's not that bad.
So, therefore, if I had a son, I would have him walking around with a golf club in his hand all the time.
He's not good looking compared to who? You and me?
He's not that bad looking. I mean, it's
not. Oh, I know. Well, I don't know. You know what? He married up in the looks.
I would agree with that. Yes, he married up.
He's
in the looks.
He's not a bad looking guy. They were in Memphis for the World Golf Championships, and my sister saw them. And he was wearing an Oklahoma State hat or something like that. He actually represents all the time. And she asked me if I knew who he was, and I go, oh, yeah. I said, was his wife with him? And my sister, that's her interest. And she goes, oh, yeah. I saw her. So,
Jesus.
But, yeah, that will, I mean, that's kind of the way that he plays. I think he had a bad first, maybe a good first round, a bad second round, good third round, and then just did what he normally does.
I'm actually a pretty good fan of Ricky. I like Ricky Fowler.
Well, Wolf's play just completely mirrored how the course played those 4 days. The course played easy on Thursday, you know, by its standard, and then it played impossible on Friday, easy on Saturday, impossible on Sunday, and he was great on Thursday, great on Saturday, and he sucked on Friday and Sunday. He just played to the level of the course.
Right, you got
to
be a little careful, Maddie. Not saying you're wrong on this, but you got to be a little careful when you talk about courses playing badly or differently on like Thursday, Friday, because unlike the Saturday, Sunday, when you cut the field down in half, it's an all day deal. When we were out here at the U.S. Open at Olympia, we were there at 7.
They teed off at 7:07 a.m. Central Time.
Well, that day we went. In the morning, there was, like, no wind, and those guys were ripping up Olympia, which is really hard to do. And all of a sudden, in the afternoon, you got this – it wasn't even a wind you and I would even recognize, Maddie, because we don't hit the ball 350, right? All of a sudden, it's like 15 miles an hour or 12, which you and I wouldn't even – it's just a gentle breeze, right? the scores in the afternoon versus the morning were dramatically different. So when
No question.
So, I mean, on Sunday, when all the leaders are playing sort of the same time on Saturday and Sunday, I'm saying sometimes there's a big difference between morning and afternoon on Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, it's a bigger window.
Yeah.
But either way, the scores on Thursday and Saturday were like...
Yeah,
hugely different than they were on Friday and Sunday.
Plus shooting a 70...
I think DeChambeau was the only person that broke par on Sunday.
And for the whole tournament. And he's the only one that finished under par the entire tournament.
Talking to himself the whole way.
Yeah, second place was even par.
He's a character.
And he, I'll tell you, talk about somebody that used the COVID time correctly. He just worked out like a madman and got ripped.
I saw you. You did that too.
No, I put on some stuff, but it's definitely not muscle.
So you didn't need the pipes? You don't have to get new shirts because the pipes won't fit?
It's not the pipes.
Oh. Here's a good one from Albert Einstein.
It's the inner tube.
Ah. Here's a good one from Albert. This one we should keep, Matty. Quote of the day from Albert Einstein. Stay away from negative people. They have a problem for every solution. We seen a lot of that these days, or what?
I like that.
God. Anyway, that is so accurate, for God's sake.
It's like everybody in the world turned into Ferris Bueller's sister.
Yeah, yeah. It's a... so what's
bothering you today, Jenny?
Well, that's what I was saying.
Jeannie or whatever.
Fighting with Kevin earlier about the Supreme Court. It has really nothing to do with what's going on right now. It's how we got here. And how do we get out of this malaise?
They've gotten worse and worse and worse every time we had a nomination. It used to be a rubber stamp. You know that?
Yeah.
It really was just like, okay. And I know you guys were talking about the stacking the court stuff because I was listening toward the end of the first hour. That's an actual thing. That's something that they want to try and do.
But
one of the senators mentioned it and got shot down very quickly and said, don't bring that up yet. Wait until after the election.
Well, but I mean, there's been changes in the society. And I'm not going to... I'll try and be in the middle on this as best I can. There were changes in the society, and you go back to, you know, the Roosevelt years when this originally first started. And I think he wasted a lot of time trying to do it. But the fact is, you went from a whole situation where all these people were landowners. Somebody else only got something if they felt like giving it to them, right? I mean, it was a world that we're getting very close to that kind of world again, unfortunately. But some people had all the money, and they felt it was their right. Even though they weren't, quote, noblemen coming out like they were in Britain, they still felt it was their right because daddy had a farm or a plantation or whatever, or a factory. They had it. And Roosevelt basically said, no, we want to put a floor under everybody in America. What was the first Social Security check? Didn't arrive until what? 1948, something like that. Maddie, please check this. Was it like $12? Or some number like that. I mean, it was
1940, and it was $22.
Okay, it was
$22.54.
Okay, I'm off by a little bit, but it was like we're talking about the most Roosevelt envisioned the most modest floor under Americans. Mm-hmm. It was not a lot of money. It was surely not somebody retiring at $200,000 a year somewhere now on public pension. It was not that at all, and yet there were people who were diametrically opposed. I mean, if you were in the street, you know, gagging on hunger, you know, maybe somebody would give you $5, but the government should never, ever give you a nickel, right? And I think as time went by, people started to feel a lot differently about that. That in the worst of times, now I'm all with you on the part, we can't just keep lobbing program after program out there without a review, and after 2 years say they don't work. I mean, the single biggest problem with the COVID situation, in my mind, economically, is after... you know, 8 years of two presidents, it doesn't matter which one it was, Obama and Trump, telling us what a great job they're doing, how great everybody is. The fact is, we're flat-ass broke. If we were that good, if we would have had zero budget deficit, or a modest one, city, state, and federal, yeah, we should throw, you know, everything, the mop and the water and everything at this one for 6 months, and we should go into debt, and by the way, we'll pay it off when we come out. Everybody knows that. But we don't seem to... One of the most amazing comments, I mean, I don't make very many that are really pretty good. Russell, one day, Dr. J and I, we were on the score. It had to be 15 years ago. we're driving, and he goes, "Chief, how come you're everything's going great?" This was before 2007, and he goes, "Why are you so grumpy about the government?" And I said, "Well, Jan, this is when the state of Illinois should have a surplus. It's never going to get any better, and they're broke now. What's going to happen? What's going to happen if something bad happens? And how many bad things have happened since then? And look at them now, right?" So if we had decent leadership and decent, you know, any kind of common sense when things were good, we could deal with something like this a lot better. Right now, would you honestly think after any crisis, other than like, you know, the bubonic plague where people are dying all over the place, I guess 200,000, I'm not going to, you know, whatever, but we shouldn't be able to get in this kind of a mess in 6 months if we were doing okay at the start of the 6 months, or where am I wrong? I mean, I think if the airlines owned a third of their planes, we'd still have to bail them out, but not to this extent. Do we still have Russell? I think we don't, Maddie.
I guess not. We'll get him back on.
Well, what do you think? The idea that the United Airlines has spent like every nickel that they've made in the last 9 years, which have been the best years ever in airline history. Russell, I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but I was saying if we were...
I did.
But even, you know, like the individual companies, I don't see us not having to bail out the big airlines after this happened. I mean, there's no way they could prepare for something like this. Yet, if in the last 10, 12 years, instead of buying stock back, which to me is the dumbest thing ever, pay a dividend, for God's sake. I mean, you buy stock back just so the 15 people up top that have stock options make more money. screw those people.
Well, there's more to it than
what?
That.
What? Name it. Name it.
Name what there's more to it than that?
Yeah.
I think companies should have a happy balance between both dividends and, buying some shares back because of the capital gain situation or the tax situation that occurs when you have a dividend paid to you. You got to pay taxes on it then versus, the capital appreciation where you can put off the taxes until you actually sell the shares. So I think it should be a combination of both.
Okay. But I'm saying if United Airlines would have taken some of that money and say owned 25 or 30% of their planes instead of like none, we'd have to pay them. We'd have to bail them out, you know, a quarter or a third less. We still have to bail them out. Nobody could plan for this. But the extent of it is dramatic.
But they get bailed out over and over again
because they don't own anything.
You know, because it's not a viable business.
Sure it is.
No, it's not. They're not making money.
They make an absolute fortune cash wise and have for 12 years.
Why do they need to be bailed out right now?
Because they haven't had anybody to fly.
If you're running a good business, and I'm not, you know, the other side of this one is definitely all the restaurants that are going out of business. That's different. But these are entities that have been, you know, that have. Has there been an industry that's still around that has had more bankruptcies?
There might be one, but I can't.
There have been a couple of auto company bankruptcies, but then they end up coming back and making money. The airline industry is, and I guess it's because there are a couple of issues with trying to be in the airline industry. One is internationally. You're competing against some state-owned entities. You know, I was supposed to go to Dubai next month for a conference, which, needless to say, has been pushed out a year. But when I was looking for, and I was going to take my wife with me, so I was being a little bit more price sensitive with the tickets. I found a couple of state-owned airlines that got me to Dubai business class for about two grand less than flying on American or United.
Well,
so they got to compete with that. So that's one thing right there. But then the other thing is the model, it's just not a profitable model for the long term the way that it is in the U.S. It's probably something that airlines are probably something that should be kind of like Amtrak that are pseudo-government-run entities much like, you know, the CTA and the Metro, which I know
you can
sit here and say how terrible they are as well, but they probably shouldn't be private companies.
See, I would disagree with that. I think that they want to be so much on the edge, and part of it is the government. They don't really want to show, but those are the guys. Russell, I have a feeling that if you and I were to look at United's tax books versus their other books, I mean, and their cash flow is dramatically high. Plus, they can't, because they can drop off because they have accelerated depreciation in all these leaseholds.
Their cash flow is high, but they're like the first guy to put his house up for sale when the recession hits. They're living check to check.
Well, they're doing that because you and I might be old enough and dumb enough to say to Maddie Weber and the listeners one day, you know, we're gonna start an airline and we're gonna fly from Chicago to Las Vegas. Nobody wants to go to Las Vegas anymore. We might actually be dumb enough to say, well, what's the first thing we need to do? Buy a plane. they don't buy a plane. Everything. How do you have how many hundred airlines?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't be on the razor's edge like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know that. I mean, if every single building,
but they have to be because their competitors are. You know.
Well, I mean, yeah. They had 12 years. I'm pointing is. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would 100% agree with you. If we weren't at 2020, if we were at 2004 or something. Okay, but the United Airlines has always lived for the unions, the management more so lately, and for Boeing. They've overplayed for planes because the government made that a monopoly, right? So they have two manufacturers in the world. What do you think the market price actually should be for a plane? 20% less than what they charge? 10? I don't know. I mean, it's something.
I don't know. I'm just, you know.
Okay, but I'm saying,
I don't know how much they make off of the, how much they make off of the implied interest when they do these things.
I would guarantee you. I guarantee you that if you and I were on the United board in 2007 and they had the best decade they probably have ever had, the airlines.
Oh yeah,
without question. You and I would not have let them spend every dime buying stock back. We'd have said, "I want to buy out of the 10 planes we're buying this year. I want to pay cash for two of them." Now I don't know if it made much difference when this would end, but I guarantee you. They have no thought of doing that. It's given money to management. It's given money to shareholders who happen to be the management. I'd love to debate you in your own class. I don't think buying stock back. First of all, you're not giving money to shareholders. You're giving money to a guy who doesn't want to be a shareholder anymore. Or where am I wrong?
Well, when you're buying stock back,
yeah.
No, you're. I mean, that's pushing the stock price higher for the people that still.
Well, want allegedly,
it.
But I mean, if you're.
It will help. It's a non-taxable. The way that I think about it is a non-taxable way to return money to shareholders by helping move the stock price higher.
I don't think if you're talking about buying back 1% of the stock that's traded in a given year that you're running that stock price up at all. If the market's anywhere near competitive.
You don't think it's getting supported at all by buying the stock back?
A little bit. But all it takes is one sell-off. Well, there are times we've had people on the show that said from 2008 to 2018, the entire amount of money that's entered the market, if you look at retail and everything, some of it came in, some of it went out, the entire amount of new cash that entered the market was some companies.
I could see that.
Now, is that
I could totally see that.
Is that healthy, not healthy? I don't know. I mean,
let's say that nobody buys shares back and then they turn around and they basically pay all of that out in dividends. Where does that money go?
First of all, you let those people make their own choices, but what if, you know, downtown Chicago, which is becoming a cesspool in terms of, now if every one of the companies down here that owned their own building. Of course, nobody owns their own building anymore. Would have paid down the building. I mean, you know, the CBOE. I mean, even though they want to move, they burned their mortgage in 1997. I was on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point, you got to get yourself out of debt for a rainy day, and we don't seem like we ever want to do that.
Nope, and that's because we if you get bailed out, you know, if your rich uncle comes, Rich Uncle Sam, comes and bails you out every time it happens, you're not learning a lesson around it. You're just going to keep operating the same way.
Schedule me and Manny and I for class, but I'm coming in person.
Cool.
SP Futures up 6.
You'll be the only one there.
SP Futures down 19. Russell, as usual, good job, buddy. Take care of yourself.
Thank
Talk
you.
To you next week.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.